Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Just to follow up on our DPD conversation from the first segment, a couple of texts coming in. Nathan in Vancouver says, remember the Ben Hutton hype? He had 25 points in his first season. I always get the impulse to pump the brakes, right? Because there have been a lot of hyped young players coming in that obviously don't pan out. That's not unique to the Canucks. That's every team across sports. It's also just very different situations, right? And, you know, Ben Hutton's played 500 NHL games is the other thing I'll say. And obviously never developed into like a top four guy or anything, but it's not like it was completely wild to be impressed with what Ben Hutton was doing.
Stanley Cup winner Ben Hutton is still in the NHL.
Yeah, and has never played. He played four games for the Utica Comets 2014-15, full-time NHLer next year. He's never played in the NHL since then. So again, like if Elias Pettersson has that career from here, yeah, obviously our Matthias Ekholm talk is going to look silly. That's fair. But again, it's not like it was like fake that Ben Hutton was playing well. And because what I remember from Ben Hutton, it was like, oh, hey, this guy's an NHL player.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it was more than that necessarily. I guess it was.
No,
for some
no.
People.
There was arguments that he was a top four caliber guy.
Yeah, that's fair.
And he wasn't. And, you know, he wasn't, I think, because I don't think he had the early onset professional mindset to like grind and improve. He kind of lacked a little bit of dog, not on the ice, but off of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the same thing with Elias Pettersson.
No.
Look, I'm dropping an Ekholm comp as like a high-end comp.
Of course.
There are tons of guys. You know, Derek Forbert is also a decent low or maybe median-end comp, right? And there's a real possibility that, you know, it's more the Ben Hutton route, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, given his the draft capital used to select him, that's probably the fat part of the bell curve is something closer to Derek Forbert, to be totally honest with you. And I mean, even Forbert was a first-round pick, 15th overall.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, there is no guarantee that he gets there, but I'm watching these tools, and I just feel like he keeps exceeding my expectations and all the stuff that he's not supposed to be good at, or at least that
aren't like the hyped part of his game.
That weren't the calling cards. And so as you begin to check those boxes, I think it's important when a guy becomes a developmental outlier that we kind of update our priors relatively quickly. You know what I mean? To accommodate that, at least in terms of how we think about the range of probability.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I think that's the big thing is no one's saying it's like, oh, he's going to be a top pairing defenseman, but it looks a lot more plausible. And I think coming into the season, most people would have said, oh, man, if he's a 5-6 guy for you, that's awesome. And now it's fair to be dreaming a little bit bigger with Elias Pettersson. On that point, James in Victoria says we can't be short-sighted and trade DPD plus for a low-end second-line center. And the devil's always in the details, and you say low-end second-line center. Look, I agree. It would be tough. And I don't think the organization has any desire to move a guy like Elias Pettersson right now when you are seeing that kind of tantalizing upside. This doesn't feel like the time when you trade him. You know what I mean? Because I don't know that his value would have necessarily spiked in the same way that our regard for the player has spiked. You know what I mean? Because it's not like the statistical profile is there. I think you probably have more value holding on to him in your organization now than he would as a trade chip.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
At this point.
Yeah.
So, look, if it's the right deal, you consider any player, but he doesn't feel like the most kind of obvious, logical potential trade chip if they're looking at that. Something like that this summer. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can keep sending your thoughts in. As I mentioned, and we talked a little bit about Brock Besser's comments to Ian McIntyre yesterday. We talked a little bit about what Patrick Alvin had to say about Rick Tocchet. Another part of that article, IMAC talking to Patrick Alvin about Elias Pettersson. And here was the meat of what Alvin had to say. Alvin said Pedersen's summer training program will be a key part of exit meeting discussions and indicated it might be best for the Swede to stay in Vancouver to train this offseason. That's something we're obviously going to talk about here when the season is over and have a plan for it, the GM said. We have the right resources here to help him. Listen, he has the ability to dictate the future, and I'm sure he wants to come back to his normal form and wants to continue to grow and get better. So we have absolutely the commitment and resources here to help him do that. Now, he also noted, obviously, like, they can't force him. That's in the CBA. Can't dictate what he does over the summer, but there is a clear desire from the team. Hey, stick around, work with us, or at least work with our resources, because you're not really allowed to work directly with
players.
Get on
the ice with them,
but at least use the resources we have available or can maybe give you in Vancouver to make sure you're coming in the best shape possible. And but I mean, there's a
it's one reason it's a hard sell.
They don't have a practice facility.
At the end of the Canucks season, the ice comes up.
Yeah,
they don't have ice at Rogers Arena all year round. Like, they're gonna have concerts, you have lacrosse, on and on. Like, they take the ice out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't work out and train in the same place. You know what I mean? It's not like you have ice the way you would at a you know, classic NHL practice facility.
Yeah, that's part of it for sure.
So it's kind of it's like you're going to be getting ice out at 8 rinks or out at UBC. It's just not that appealing.
Yeah.
I'm just talking from the perspective of an NHL player. It's just not that appealing relative to, you know, Pedersen's setup in Sundsvall or, you know, what have you, right? Or if he goes and works at, like, Timrå, you know, they've got a rink and a gym all in one place. You show up for the morning, you get all your work done, you're done by 2. You haven't had to drive around town in rush hour.
That's the lack of practice facility is an issue here for sure. More than anything, I was thinking about these comments on Pedersen in the context of what we were hearing from Quinn Hughes the other day about his obligations to the franchise. You know, we were talking about the covenant, the partnership between a team and its captain, a team and its top players. And it feels like they're trying to reset the relationship they have with Elias Pettersson, or they want to reset what their relationship looks like with that player. And I think we all know when you're the highest paid player on the team, like Elias Pettersson is, the relationship should be what we're seeing from Quinn Hughes, where he's putting the work in. You don't have to say, hey, stick around so we can make sure you're putting the work in. You have the trust in the player that he's going to fulfill his obligations, and then you're going to go out and do your side of the bargain, which is try to put the best team possible around him, give them all the resources, put them in a position to succeed. They need to get there with Elias Pettersson. This feels like a bid. I mean, if they're going to have success and they're going to choose to keep him over the summer, they need to at least feel like they're on the road to establishing that sort of relationship with Elias Pettersson, that you can credibly say we have a partnership where we know he's going to hold up his end of the bargain. And it feels like when they say, you know, hey, this is going to be a big part of our exit meeting discussions, that's what they're getting at. They want to reset that side of the relationship. My problem is, like, do you do that by kind of babysitting the player over the summer? You know what I mean? At a certain point, as much as you can say, well, we want him here in Vancouver, we've got these resources we can make available to him, if you can't trust that Elias Pettersson is going to, of his own accord, without you prodding him, do what's necessary in the summer, do what he has to do, work hard enough to come into training camp in better shape and primed to have a good season, if you can't trust him to make those decisions, isn't that just very, very telling about where things stand with the player? You know what I mean? Like, even the fact that they think they have to do that, even if he does it, I would still be a little concerned. It's like, well, do we have to do this every summer, or is this going to be a lesson learned now? So I think it's a very revealing piece of commentary, because when you're playing a player $11.6 million like that long term, I think a baseline expectation is we're not worried about what he's doing in the summers. We know he's got it figured out. We know he's got the right plan. We know he's going to put the work in.
Yeah, I mean, I've been reporting for a long time that preparation, right, was something that the club sees as a big issue. And honestly, I think they understand, too, that coming off a summer like he had last year, even with a good summer, it might take him 30, 40 games before he gets back to what he was.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a now. I think there is a significant willingness to be patient with this player, given, you know, what his ceiling is and the internal belief that caused the club to initially commit to a 8-year, $11.6 million per year contract with him only like 13, 14 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do think she's needing to see signs of progress from the perspective of that preparation is presumably vital as this club weighs their options this offseason.
But I like signs of progress. You know what I mean? Like that feels like such a low bar.
No, I know.
Like, oh, it was a little better. It was progress. He's not. This isn't a 22-year-old. You know what I mean? Who's still figuring in the league. Like how many NHL games has he played? 500? It just feels if you're at this stage with the player, it's pretty again. And as you said, you've been reporting for a while now that the preparation thing is an issue. I think this really underscores just how serious the issue is. And I also wonder if there's an element here where they're kind of setting up their expectations. And if he is not willing to meet them or indicates, no, I don't want to stay in Vancouver. I've got my own thing. I'm, you know, whatever you guys think about my preparation, I know what I'm going to do. If there's not some sort of meeting in the middle, that it tips their ultimate decision on what to do with him in a certain direction, right? Like if what we're seeing here is almost the opening salvo of a negotiation process for what his summer is going to look like.
Look, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's just speculation on my part, obviously.
No, but yeah. I mean, you're right that it's a low bar, but what else can you do? Like you've got a couple months here, right? You can do what you can to lay out expectations for mm-hmm. the offseason. You can't work with him on ice. You can't have coaches skating with him and on, but you can lay out an offseason program and you can stay in touch. And you've got a few months here, some time to see exactly how this all progresses
mm-hmm.
before you have the NMC kick in, which, as I say, is not a drop dead deadline from the organization's perspective, but certainly you've got 2 months before you're really like the hot stove's going to get fired back up in the NHL. So use that time at least. Why not? This is what we want it to look like.
Yep.
And then you can evaluate in 2 months if it looks like that or not, and at least factor that information into making it tectonic franchise-altering decision about what to do with Pettersson going forward.
Crane Truck Mark says, it's not that they don't trust Elias Pettersson to work out and come back in great shape. It's the fact that he's the most important player on the whole team, so it means a lot, so they're trying to be as helpful as possible. That's a fair point. I do think there's an element of concern about what it would look like, kind of away from their watchful eyes. But yes, of course, the stakes are heightened in a major way with Elias Pettersson compared to other players on the team, so in that sense, it makes sense that they would want to be a little bit more involved with Elias Pettersson, what he's doing in the summer. This text comes in unsigned. Trading him over where he's going to train would be so stupid, especially with the lack of facility. I don't disagree, but I think it's more just a willingness, again, to kind of be in that partnership. That's what it comes down to. More than where are you going to train, it's are you going to be the type of player we can rely on? Like Quinn Hughes. Are you going to be more like Quinn Hughes? And I hate pitting them against each other like this, but it's just hard not to draw the contrast between how the two players have operated this year, how management speaks about them, right? Like everything. And it's not that long ago where we were having very plausible debates about, well, who's the most important building block going forward for the Canucks, Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson? And it's not even that long ago where most people would have said Elias Pettersson with a bullet. Answer to that question.
Certainly 2.5 years ago.
And they like really, I think that's what we're kind of dancing around this issue, but they were supposed to be the twin pillars of this organization. Quinn Hughes has risen to that level, and I'm not saying Elias Pettersson has to like get talked about in Sidney Crosby ways, but it has to be much closer to the Quinn Hughes level than we've seen. And again, more so than just does he train in Vancouver, does he train in Sweden? I think that's what Patrick Alvin is talking about, is like, we need to see that from you. And I think that's the easiest way to think about the decision to trade him or not. You know what I mean? Is like, do we think we're going to get that? Because if you think you're going to get that, then you keep him 100%.
So let me frame it this way for you. What do you expect to hear about Pettersson's future from Alvin, Rutherford, Tockett when they meet with the media at some point following
this season? I think we're going to hear something very similar to these comments from Ian McIntyre, that there's a level. Here's what I'll lay it out in like bullet points. A level of disappointment, right? They're going to say we were disappointed, or maybe not quite. They'll say that, but you know, obviously they'll acknowledge that it was underwhelming. So that's bullet point one. I would say bullet point two is either they're going to say we've started to have conversations, or we're going to have conversations about what it looks like for going forward, how we can get him back to his level. We know he wants to get back to his level, etc. We have the resources, all of that. And then number three, I think, not a declaration that they're going to keep him, but some sort of expression of confidence that he can get back to his level. Yeah, hey, we're confident if he does all these things, he can be a great player in this league. Those would be my three bullet points, right? Acknowledge disappointment. We're talking to him. We have a plan, and we have a degree of confidence in him they can get back. Does that sound reasonable to you? Not like that. That's the kind of, that would be the no fireworks approach, I would say. The no drama approach to handling.
Well, I would like to see the club follow a no drama approach generally, but I wouldn't put it outside the realm of possibility that there's a shot fired across his bow.
Like what?
We remain deeply committed to this player and to helping him reach his potential.
That's not a shot across the bow.
But, oh, okay. But
there we go.
But we think he needs to work an awful lot harder this summer than he did last summer. And we think that played a role in what we saw this season, and we're all on the same page and making sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I think partly what we're there's just like a tone difference between what we're saying. You know what I mean? Because they are going to allude to the preparation thing. They've already done it so many times. They're not going to stop alluding to it now after it's already been out there. And there's just really just a question of how inflammatory do you make that allusion? You know what I mean? It's just a question of, you know, a prep like, he's figured out now, because that's the one way to say it, and Alvina's kind of said a couple of times now he understands what he has to do to prepare and come into the shape we need him to. Then there's what you're saying, which is like, yeah, we were so frustrated with how he came in. I would be a little surprised if they take that route, but I guess you never know with the Canucks.
You never know.
Now the real question, like, what are we gonna hear from Elias Pettersson? Because yeah, is he gonna be asked, are you gonna stay in Vancouver? You would think so, right? Year-end media availabilities? Like, that would be my number one question for him. Patrick Alvin indicated he'd like you to stay in Vancouver for the summer.
Yeah.
What are your plans?
He'll be asked that.
Yeah.
I think he'll be asked for an update just generally. Like, are you skating? Where are you at physically? Because he ended the season injured.
Right, of course.
And I think he'll be asked to account for what happened. You know, now that the season's over, how do you look back on and assess your performance? And, you know, we'll see. Like, I'm really curious to see generally in that environment, that press conference environment, like, what's the vibe?
Well, and this text comes in, what's management going to say about their poor season? And I think that's a fascinating question as well that management is going to be faced with. Like, how do they see their role in this season ending up as disappointing as it was? What have they learned? What mistakes do they see that they would do differently next time? And you don't often get super direct answers to those types of questions, but I think again it's a very fair, when a season has gone as off the rails as this one did for the Canucks, there's no one who's above accountability. There's no one who's above being asked, like, hey, what would you do differently? How what part did you play in this season going as it did? And yeah, I think that this is something that's come in a bunch in the inbox, is questions along those lines for management. I think that probably is something that they will be directly asked next week sometime when we hear from, we're still waiting on the date, by the way, when we hear from Canucks management and players.
Yeah. What we hear from management will obviously be scrutinized closely. What we hear from Pettersson will be scrutinized closely. And I think, again, just the general tone of this group, right? I think that can be a difficult atmosphere. We've seen that pretty repeatedly when this club has conducted these. What level of accountability are players willing to take? What sort of shape does that come in? How, like, adversarial and abrasive is the environment? You know, I'm curious to see all of it.
Is it weird that I don't think it's going to be super adversarial this year?
I think it better not
be. At least
not
with the players.
I think it better not be.
I could feel it being more adversarial with the management side of things this year.
I think it better not be.
Yeah.
I think it's important for everybody to take their lumps. Like, I think it's important that this organization not be defensive in the face of sort of criticism, which, let's be real, I think over the course of the season has not been overwhelming.
No, and the reason I say
these guys have not.
The reason I say in the players one is, okay, Elias Pettersson's going to face some tough questions. Who else on a player side is even like in a position to get grilled? You know what I mean? Questions.
But it's not about that. It's that they're going to be asked about falling short. They're
sure.
going to be, and you know, acknowledging that side of it.
Yeah. And I get what you're saying is that even though those are kind of boilerplate things that all teams have to deal with, that doesn't mean it doesn't get adversarial sometimes.
What was the question? Like the question, Phil, were you injured in the playoffs resulted in what we saw last year? I mean, it's not like that was like, Phil, man, really? Your performance in the playoffs, up to par, buddy. What happened? Like, it's not like that was the question.
No.
So, you know, it's not necessarily the difficult ones that...
It's just, I guess, and your point is well taken, that what I'm saying is, like, the questions should mostly be pretty straightforward, and your counterpoint is, well, that hasn't always mattered in the past. That hasn't always stopped it from getting, like, kind of chirpy and adversarial in these situations. So... We'll see. From a player's perspective, I don't think it should be that. I think the atmosphere should be pretty all right, even though it has been a really disappointing season. But we'll see beyond that. Marty the Red says, they challenged Brock after a successful season. I hope they throw some truths at Petey as closing remarks. I understand that kind of desire for the, you know, the cathartic remarks, right? If you're a fan who's been really, really frustrated with Elias Pettersson, you want to see that accountability. I get it. You want to see the team really, you know, throw some shots at them. You also have to remember this is an incredibly tricky situation. They're still trying to manage. And look, again, they haven't always had a delicate touch with these types of things, but you'd love to see them start to take more of that no drama approach, more of just the, hey, play the real softball answer, you know, down the middle, no surprises, no headlines, move on. Don't give us the juicy quote and then just move on from it there. We'll see. We'll see if that happens. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. We got one more open segment up next here before Dmitry Filipovich joins us at 1:30. We'll take a spin around the NHL with Dmitry for that segment, and we'll read more of your texts on the other side here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dmitry Filipovich is going to join us in half an hour here on the show for his weekly hit to wrap up Fridays with us. And this is the last time, I've refrained from doing it so far today, Drancer, because a common theme for us during the season is whether on air or off air, me on Friday afternoon saying to you, without meaning to rub it in on you, but saying, I'm so excited it's the weekend, only 2 hours until the weekend. And then you're like, I'm working both days because I'm covering the Canucks.
Yeah.
And this is the last time. This is the last edition of that.
Yeah, no, I know. I got a happy Friday at the coffee shop today.
And you're like, oh.
And I was like, this is actually my last one before that means something to me. But
so you're almost through. There you go. And then we'll be able to celebrate Fridays together.
Sure.
Wow. All right. Never mind. I won't say happy Friday to you even when it's your Friday.
I'd rather be covering playoff hockey.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
you got to look on the bright side,
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, not your strong suit.
No. And also, I have a particular antipathy for hockey.
Substandard hockey?
Hockey at this time of year. You know, like three home games, so I'm going to be there for all three. And just like the lack of stakes. Like, look, if Quinn Hughes breaks the franchise scoring record, that's cool.
That's cool.
Would be cooler, though, to do it
going into the playoffs. It'd be awesome. It'd be a great way to wrap up another playoff bound regular season.
Sherwood scoring 20, Suter getting to 25. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Love to see a Brock Besser hat trick. Brock Besser.
It's going to be an interesting scene this week for Brock Besser.
Hat trick and a couple goals in another game. You know what I'm saying? Get to 30. Really juice that free agent case, baby. Let's go.
That would be fantastic.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, you know, Ben Hankinson, we doing his cartwheels then. It's the hat trick from Brock Besser.
Yeah, I don't think they have to worry too much about that market. But, you know, look, the good news is for Canucks fans, you know they're winning all three. You know they're going out and collecting six more points.
Well, we'll see what the Minnesota game, if Minnesota still has to, like, try hard in that
way. Yeah, because they could be playing the second leg of back-to-back, but as a desperate team.
Yeah, or as at least as a team that's worried enough that they have to do something. So
worried
we'll see. Worried enough. That's what we're aiming for at this point of the year.
So that's the last chance to have some meaning in a Canucks game.
Mm-hmm. You get to see Macklin Celebrini against the Sharks. There you go. Oh, come on.
No, he's amazing.
I don't know why I'm trying to pep talk you into enjoying your job.
I don't know.
No skin off my back.
I don't like meaningless hockey, man.
Yeah, I get it.
And it's funny because I actually am like pretty into the preseason because there's like jobs. There's like a couple jobs at stake. And
well, the preseason though is also it's the difference between like that's after a long drought of any hockey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're ramping up.
So you're like, oh my gosh, hockey's back. This is so exciting. You're getting back into the rhythm. You're getting into the routine again and all of that. It's the ritual element of it. But even preseason hockey, after what, two games? One game? We come on and we're like, yeah, we're ready for the regular season to start. We're ready for the games to mean something.
Yeah.
And the preseason glow fades pretty quickly.
And the games are about to mean so much and be so fun.
Yeah. And that's the problem with this time of year is it's the inherent lull before you know what it's going to look like in you know, what, 10 days here or something or less probably than that. So it can be a little difficult.
Yep.
But the playoffs will be here soon. Not difficult for me. Difficult for you. This text comes in. Do you think they jumped the gun with the Marcus Pettersson signing, or do you think the timeline works for DPD to mature into the second pair role over the next few years? I think you could argue they jumped the gun with the trade for Marcus Pettersson, but the signing after that, I don't have a big problem with. I mean, I like Marcus Pettersson. I think he's been a good fit for the team. He's he's 28 now, so 5.5 going forward. If DPD forces your hand in a couple of years and you're like, well, we have to be giving this guy top 4 minutes on the left side, that's the definition of a good problem to have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think you're ever going to look and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we have this Marcus Pettersson thing. You've just got an extra good defenseman at that point. You can work with that. That's a good asset to have. If the development of Elias Pettersson goes like you think it could and like the team hopes it could.
Yeah, I think the trade is the one that worries me.
Mm-hmm.
The contract is fine. You would have had to pay more if Marcus Pettersson had got to July 1.
Yep.
So, but the trade worries me because I think the Rangers are a mess. Despite putting up 9 goals last night on the New York Islanders, it might be more of a mess.
That is what a checked out hockey game looks like.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, the Rangers are a mess. We'll see if they get a new coach next year. It certainly looks like they're going to and how that might change the picture. But it's been a difficult watch for Rangers fans over the last while. But yeah, I don't worry about like blocking DPD. If he's cresting, like we were talking about earlier in the show, then Marcus Pettersson's not blocking him. You know what I mean? Then you figure it out. Then you get him the minutes and hey, now you've got Marcus Pettersson as an overqualified third pairing defenseman on the left side. And of course, this is all premised on Quinn Hughes sticking around long term as well, because that dramatically changes your depth chart on the long time. So just in general, like I wouldn't worry too much about veterans blocking the young players because worst case scenarios, you just got a couple guys you feel good about in that slot. And especially on the blue line, you can always make that work in your favor. You can always deal those players for assets back and good value back as well. We talked about DPD quite a bit in the show. The other young player, and he didn't score last night, but he picks up an assist on the Dakota Joshua goal. And I think the other bright young player storyline to end this season has been Atu Ratu. And I don't think it's anywhere near the same. You know, if DPD, as I was saying earlier, like he's like almost already become a fan favorite kind of folk heroes type thing with the way he plays the game, the physicality. Ratu doesn't have that element, but his performance coupled with the obvious massive needs down the middle for the Canucks going forward, and we'll see what they're able to do at that position. I think it's also very understandable that fans are getting excited from what they're seeing from Ratu. The question there, I guess, to me is one, can he stick at center? And then two, what does the ceiling look like? But based on what we've seen from Atu Ratu, you know, over the course of the whole season, and then, of course, over this most recent stint in the NHL with the Canucks, what do you look at as kind of reasonable expectations for the player going into next season? Is it as simple as be on the NHL roster? Like, that's the next step for him, be on the NHL roster for all 82?
Well, you've got Bluger signed, and you've got Hedl, presumably, as a third-line center, and we know the club's going to be motivated to add a second-line center, and we expect, like, if you had to handicap how likely it is that Pedersen's back next year, you'd still put it more than 50%,
right? 100%, yeah.
Like 65, 70?
I'd probably go like 80, 85, to be honest.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah.
You love your 15%.
That's right.
So, where's the spot for him? Right, like he's going to have to win a spot. Are you willing to play Bluger on the wing so that he can be
Do you play Ratu on the wing but have him take draws?
That's
another spot for him in the lineup.
Playing with Hedl and whomever, Hedl and Sherwood, third line, something like that.
Or on the fourth line. And the thing with Ratu is, I don't know that we look at him as...
You're going to have injuries anyway. Like, there's going to be opportunities to play elsewhere.
If he spends part of the year as a 13th forward... I don't know if anyone's doing the hue and cry about, like, oh, he should be in Abbotsford instead.
No, but we should be.
You think so?
I think so. He's not
that old.
No, he's not old at all. I mean, let's look it up so that we know exactly what we're talking about. But I think, like, 23 is in my head. 22 or 23.
I think he's 22.
22.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is not a 24-year-old who's had a random glove. Like, this is a real prospect. This is a real guy with some ceiling, too. And by the way, he's played really well.
He's played really well.
Really well. Wins, draws. Partly it's on him. Like, go away this summer and come back. You added a full step last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Do it again,
and then we're cooking. Then you're really cooking here with Atu Ratu.
Correct.
If you can do that again.
And then there's an awful lot of options that open up for you as a result of that, right? So, you know, I'm interested. I'm interested in what Atu Ratu can do. I think probably the best version of this team, frankly, has a more threatening, like, Tockett's pretty good about using depth forward lines as weapons. And Teddy Bluger, I know that it worked for like 3 months with Dakota Joshua and Garland last season, but he takes some stuff off the table offensively, a lot of stuff. And, like, you know, down the line, because you got Bluger for another year, you need Bluger for the PK. I'm not suggesting that Bluger's not additive.
Bluger is a fourth line center I have zero issue with. Zero issue with.
I also have zero issue with it, but there's a world where to get to where you want to go, you'd rather have a little bit more offensive punch.
Sure, but it's so far down the priority list that they're dealing with. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And as you said, PK, and he's under contract on a sheet. You know what I mean? It's like, whatever.
And you know, good teammate, well-liked, on and on. So, but I do think there's a world where if you had Atu Ratu as a fourth line center, that would be better for your team. It's just not a world we live in yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and this team needs some, you know, veteran leaders, and guys like Teddy Bluger matter a lot, given, you know, especially how this season has gone down. So I don't know. I don't know exactly where he fits, but he gives the Canucks some serious center depth and a young guy with upside, and that all matters. And the rest of it will be determined by what he earns.
Yeah, what he does over the summer, what he does in training camp. I mean, you speak about earning a spot. Any work he can do proving to the coaching staff that he can be a PK option is obviously going to be huge for him, as it is with all, you know, young players in that bottom six mix. If you can earn that type of trust, that's a big, big deal for Ratu going forward as well. It's interesting you bring up Hedl as a potential third line center. It's just so difficult to know what to expect from Filip Hedl in terms of availability going forward to next season. I mean, that's another wrinkle in this whole center dilemma that the Canucks have about who's going to be playing down the middle for them next year. Is like, how do you even factor in the Filip Hedl injury situation of it all? That could create an opening for Atu Ratu to be in the mix as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Brad in Langley texts in, if you believe in Hoglander, O'Connor, Sherwood, or Lekkerimäki being two of your third line wingers next year, do you move Garland and Joshua to open up cap space? That's from Brad in Langley. Dakota Joshua, if we're ranking players that we have confidence will bounce back next year, I am very high on a Dakota Joshua bounce back this season. Like, if there's ever a player that you could point to and be like, I can understand why he didn't have his best year, it's a guy who was dealing with testicular cancer over the summer. So if we were to draft with Dimitri potential bounce backs on the Canucks, and I don't think we should, but if we were to do that, I would be taking Dakota Joshua very high. Like, I am high.
Ahead of Pettersson?
In terms of likelihood to bounce back, yes. I am much higher on a Dakota Joshua bounce back. And I think we have, because there's been so much else going on, we've like underrated and under discussed how much him not being the same guy has hurt this team. He was a massive part of that team.
Yeah.
A couple years ago. He was a big part of it. He was playing top 6 minutes for them in the playoffs.
For sure. But that line was losing the battle territorially. They were super efficient. It worked, but like it worked by the skin of the team's teeth.
I'm just saying that third line was huge for them, and his partnership with Garland was massive in the regular season, and then he got bumped up and was playing top six minutes.
I mean, you're
like, there was a big, that was a
you're
big
preaching
impact.
To the choir. You know how high I've been on Dakota Joshua throughout. Would you put him as more likely to bounce back than Demko?
Probably. I don't know, because if Demko's healthy, then I think he's going to be really good. You know what I mean? It's just a question of how many games do you get out of him. So that's a little more difficult to handicap, whereas Dakota Joshua, I just think, is going to be healthy and good next year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be too keen to move off of Dakota Joshua, like the low ebb of his performance.
I think if I'm confident in a forward bouncing back, I'm always going to take that ahead of a goalie. Just because
goalie, it's more stable.
Yeah. Goalie performance is so volatile that, you know, especially if you're only going to, if you're sharing the net, like, especially if we're looking at only 45 starts, like, it's super easy for even the best goaltender in the world to have 20 bad games
mixed in there.
You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it's like, well, they weren't that good. You know, he can dominate the other 25 and people would be like, well, he was inconsistent. It's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
like,
he's a goalie. He was inconsistent.
Yeah.
It was wild how that works.
So, yeah, no, I get it. The
question what he's asking, though, is like the considering moving Garland or Joshua to open up cap space. This is something we've talked about a little bit, right? Where it's the guys with 1 or 2 years left on their deals.
Sure, but Joshua has three.
Joshua has three. So, and again, Joshua, I don't think is if you wanted to move him and this isn't the right time, I'm confident in a bounce back, all yada, yada, yada. But the Garland one is interesting.
I'm also kind of interested, to be totally honest with you, when you begin to sort of go through it and it's like O'Connor, Sherwood, Joshua, DeBrusk, as just sort of like, and you know, Garland and Hoglander fit into this too, but I mean, between Joshua and O'Connor, you've got a fair bit of size and pace, right? Those guys are guys with pace and size. I think I've really liked O'Connor's game. I know he hasn't been the most productive. I know he missed a glorious scoring opportunity in the first period last night, but there's so much to like about his defensive game. You know, Sherwood has a lot of grit, a lot of that, you know, hittiness, a lot of sandpaper.
A lot of that hittiness. Yeah. He sure does.
And a lot of that sandpaper in his game. And then Hoglander, you know, bit of a loose cannon, like got to keep your head up, especially if you've bugged him at some point. And Garland obviously has that dog in him. DeBrusk has at least that pace.
You sound like you're going to ask Hoglander to turn in his badge and gun. You're a loose cannon.
Yeah, you're off the case, Nils. Well, he can be.
He can be.
Yeah, he can. He's a keep your head up around guy.
Absolutely.
100%. And so, yeah, I mean, that becomes an interesting stylistic mix on the wings. I think you need more goal scoring, right? You need more one-shot scoring that group.
It's a really interesting mix for your bottom six.
For your bottom six.
Really interesting. And Jake DeBrusk fits into the top six,
and
obviously.
And maybe even a couple guys who you're very happy with in your middle six.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean,
it's a great fit for your middle six and bottom line.
Yes.
Your bottom nine, let's call it that.
Yeah.
Right? But
I think you'd probably be looking for one guy better to round out your second line.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. To add it. Well, but Garland, unless, like, Garland unless, and Garland,
that's fair.
I think if you had a stud centerman, if you had even if you just had one of those Pavel Zacha type guys, like DeBrusk, Zacha, Garland, that's probably like what, the 16th best second line in hockey.
Sure.
It's not the reason you're going to win, but it's not the reason you're going to lose.
Yeah. It's not killing you.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, all right.
There's two top six guys in that mix. Anyway, I think that's actually relatively interesting. Lacking in star talent, lacking in sizzle, but with the way that this team plays, with sort of the desirability of speed and doggedness from a Rick Tocchet perspective. I mean, I think that's at least it's something. At least it's the start of something.
I don't think we're going to be talking in the same way. We're not going to be talking a lot about what they're going to do on the blue line going into the summer, because like, well, they got a bunch of defensemen under contract and they've got some young guys coming, right? Like, we're not going to be talking a lot about that. I don't know if the bottom six is going to be a big focus as we get closer to July 1st in the summer and we see what type of roster moves they're going to make. And partly that's just inherent because the top six is such an important focus, and top line, top two centers and top line winger and all of that is such a big deal. That's always going to take precedence over talking about the bottom six. But as you say, they've also just got some interesting pieces to work with in there. And I like, to get back to the texter's question, kind of, I do wonder how much you end up looking at, you know, hey, we've got some interesting pieces on the bottom six. Can we move one of those guys? And, you know, Garland would be a piece that would be interesting, even though he is probably, after DeBrusk, the most legitimate top six caliber player they have. If Brock Besser leaves,
you say after DeBrusk?
Well, sure.
That's very, very much arguable.
Yeah, that's fair.
What?
I'm just saying, he's the legitimate top six guy from that list.
Were you worried that I was picking a fight for no reason?
Yes, I sure was.
for those of you just listening, Jamie like put out his hand. He's like, yeah, I get it, man. I
did like the calming gesture to Drance.
I was like,
he's a wild animal.
I was like, dude, it's not like that big
like
a deal.
Chris Pratt, Pratt with the Raptors.
Yeah.
That was my body language there.
I'm the untrained Raptor that you're like really worried about. I'm definitely not blue.
No.
Yeah.
You're definitely not blue. Anyways, like Garland, and I think Hoglander would be the other one there, right? If some team sees what he's doing and the underlying numbers, and do you think, okay, well, and again, people always, you know, you bring up trading a good player or a player you like, and I like both Garland and Hoglander. I think there's absolutely a world where they stick around and help the Canucks win and are big pieces. But they need to make some big moves. They need to find a way to get in extra assets to open up space, whether it's salary cap space, roster space, whatever it is, to get those assets and to bring in high impact players. And it might be a case of, you know, we talk about the blue line being a place of surplus that they can maybe deal a little extra from. And I wonder if they have to consider some of these middle line player or middle six players as well as guys they might have to move off from.
Yeah. And more than anything, I think, you know, the one year guys for me are where this team, I think, needs to tread really carefully. And this is more about building a hedge position than anything else. But I do think being cognizant of what this could look like if it doesn't work out, right? Making sure that you're not doing bets like the OEL trade, right? Because the real issue with the OEL trade, and I mean, there were a lot of them, but it committed the Canucks in a lot of ways in a win now season with a management group that's, you know, hold on their job security was clearly tenuous, where their plan was going to take multiple seasons to unwind,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Rutherford and Alvin largely had their hands tied trying to fix it for two seasons, right? The first full season that they worked out, which was the Bruce There It Is season, and the subsequent season was just like letting deals toll, executing buyouts, trading at the deadline both years, like selling at the deadline, you know, harvesting those draft picks that become Volander and Lekaramaki. Like, you got to go for it this year. Quinn Hughes deserves this team, deserves to be the leader of a team with a shot at contending. Okay, there's no question about that. But I do think this team has to be mindful of going for it in a way that doesn't leave them in a situation where it's multiple seasons stepping back in the event that things go pear-shaped on them. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they have to build a hedge position here. And one thing that I think that needs to be at least be a consideration is guys who are expiring, like Demko and Garland, in my view, You know, with Demko, it doesn't make sense to extend him from either side. But given the dynamic with Lankinen having signed, and given the fact that, you know, backup goaltending is something that Jim Rutherford has tended to prefer to save on, and given the club's needs up front, right, on and on, do you consider Demko as something, as an asset that could potentially, if you can find the right team, help you address your gap down the middle or up front? Garland, are you open to an extension? If not, do you consider, because the same win now pressure that you're dealing with this summer because of Hughes's status, if this team is in a similar boat as they were this season at the deadline, like, yeah, they're in eighth by a point or two, but it's not a cinch that they make it. You expect this team to be willing to deal a guy like Garland in that situation? Like, the pressure's not going away.
Yeah.
See if you can work out a team-friendly extension or a favorable extension. And if you can't, that's information that you can use. That's another key piece.
Don't run the Besser situation back.
No. And see if, you know, see if you're able to bundle guys and maybe bring in some younger guys with some term, right? Or even if they're the same age, some good veterans with some term. Give yourself some runway. Don't, you got to go all in. You got to be prioritizing the short term this summer, but do it in a way that at least is mindful of giving yourself outs to pivot quickly if it doesn't work, right? I think that's a really critical balance that management's going to have to strike this summer. And by the way, it's not unlike the balance they struck with all those expiring deals during the 2023-24 campaign, which worked out miraculously, right? Build a hedge position. Some of their best work has been done with that in mind. I'd like to see them recreate that this summer.
Okay, we'll take a break. You can keep sending your texts in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dmitry Filipovich, he's the host of the Hockey PDOcast. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We're broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us, as he usually does here on a Friday afternoon, he's the host of the Hockey PDOcast on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He's Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, Dim?
Oh, not much. Closing out another week. Always great to be here with you guys. Yeah. I pulled a little prank. I was worried that Tom wasn't going to join us. He burst into the studio here last minute.
I've got good timing for that.
He left his laptop open. I pulled up Kenny Pickett's Pro Football Reference page just to mess with him a little bit. Now he's doing a deep dive on it, so we'll see. We might lose him for the rest
of the really show. He's really diving into the Kenny Pickett stats?
Yeah.
Turns out he's not good.
Turns out those small hands?
Small hands Pickett.
Small hands
I don't know if that's
Pickett.
The reason, but yeah, it didn't work out for him.
I was when he tried to throw the ball and tossed himself into the ground. Yeah. I think after that, I knew.
It took you till then?
Yeah.
You're like, hold on a second here. I'm not sure I like this guy.
I was in on Kenny Pickett for like Superflex 2 years ago.
Sure. Sure, why not? I think the list of guys you haven't been in on.
He's in on everyone.
For deep fantasy leagues at some point is very small.
Especially when it comes to quarterbacks. Yes. I just don't believe that quarterbacks are, like, I don't believe anyone knows what they're talking about. It's kind of like goalies.
Are we doing dynasty football the rest of the season here?
Let's do it.
That would be the best.
Okay, we will get to some hockey talk here. Now, I'm sure we're going to talk playoffs and the good teams with you. I want to take a second to talk about the teams that will not be participating in the playoffs. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. I want you to choose from each conference one non-playoff team to make the playoffs next year. And if you want bonus points, you can name the team that's going to fall out too. We don't have to. I'll leave it up to you, Tim.
All right, let's do it. You're never going to believe this. I'm going to stay
Utah?
On brand in Utah. So a little sneak peek behind the curtain. I was just did a Winnipeg Jets show for my show, and I was doing some research on the numbers since the Four Nations break, and the Jets have improved significantly at 5-on-5. They're second in every metric. The teams below them, the 4-5 teams, are all the top teams in the league. Number one in expected goals at 5-on-5 and high danger chances is none other than the Utah Hockey Club. They've been playing really well. I know they blew the shootout game last night against Nashville, but they kind of blew the doors off LA, Winnipeg recently. I feel like they're going to be very active this offseason. They have a ton of cap space. They're one of the few teams that they have a bunch of future seconds and thirds next in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So all this talk about offer sheets becoming common practice or more so now, I feel like they're a candidate to actually do so with a restricted free agent this offseason. And I just think they're going to improve. And we already saw what Cooley and Gunther did in the second half of this year and the step they took. So yeah, I know it's nothing new here that we're high on the Utah Hockey Club, but I feel like they're the team to make the jump. And I don't really know who's going to fall out. It's going to be one of those central teams in the wild card, I think.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I think what we've seen from the Blues with what Holloway and Broberg have brought there, and then obviously Kyrou and Thomas still being in their prime, maybe they won't be the team to fall out, especially with how good they've been under Montgomery. I know that it's unfair to evaluate the Wild because Kaprizov's only played like 35, 40 games, but they seem like the team probably most vulnerable.
Minnesota's got the big cap space bump, though, too. That's the one thing that would give. But I know agree
Bill
Guerin,
he's going to like he spent his money this past offseason on like Yakov Trenin. Like, they're not going to add like a glitzy scorer. They're going to add like some bottom six grinder in classic Minnesota Wild fashion. So,
all right, I can see that. I like that Utah over Minnesota / St. Louis in all likelihood.
I don't know. That's kind of a boring pick, but I feel like
you guys stay on brand. We don't need you to be like Stephen A with the hot takes here. Like, just say what you really think. It's fine.
Like, the East is much more open, I think. The West, the top teams are pretty solidified for the most part. Like, as disappointed as we've been in what Edmonton's done this season, they're going to have Draisaitl and McDavid again. They're going
to
be good.
Hard to see the
Vegas has such a built-in core and infrastructure, and they're obviously going to get better as well. LA has such a strong defensive system. They're not going to fall off. So there's very few teams there that, like, would be a fascinating pick to completely just bottom out next season, barring some sort of catastrophic injury.
Yeah.
In the East?
In the East? Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel like it might be... the Blue Jackets would be the pick, right?
Yeah, because they're the Utah equivalents.
Yeah, especially if they make some savvy moves and their young players keep improving under Dean Evason, I feel like... And especially if they figure out the goaltending. The goaltending's been so tragic down the stretch here. It would probably be the Canadians just because they're so close, although they're so young that...
It does feel like, though, that they could have the letdown season.
Yeah, they need to do what Washington did this past offseason, which is, like, make the playoffs as the eighth seed, and then don't just be happy with that, but actually keep improving your team and making, like, big swings. We'll see.
Just pat yourself on the back for having made the playoffs.
And that big swing might be Demidov, for all we know. Like, a full season of him might make a massive difference for them. And obviously Hudson and Suzuki still getting better. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time. There's not too many teams that are kind of teetering on the precipice of completely falling off. I guess we saw the Bruins finally do so this year. But even teams like the Lightning, as long as they have Kucherov and Vasilevsky, I can't really see them having a season where they're in the lottery. So there's very few spots available.
Looking at playoff teams, now we saw the Canucks make NHL history this week against the Dallas Stars. 3 goals in the final minute to come
back
and win
hockey.
That game. Yeah. Truly incredible stuff. Like, I mean, literally, it's never happened
and
in
Nashville
the NHL
did
before.
A very similar thing to the Islanders the same night. Like, 30 minutes later, they scored 2 in the final minute, won it in overtime as well.
Well, you saw all the companies putting up, like, the stat boards for fastest 3-goal comebacks. Yeah. And, like, 3 of them were from this year in NHL history, including one the Canucks were on the other side up against the Seattle Kraken. So it's happened a lot this year. From Dallas's perspective, is that just like late season mean nothing blip, or is it evidence of something they should be more worried about going into the playoffs?
No, I think it's full on panic time. You even watch them on Thursday night against Winnipeg and the defensive mistakes guys like CeCe and Dumba made, and they look just outclassed against the best team in the Central there. That round one matchup against Colorado is obviously frightening for a variety of reasons, even though they will have home ice. I guess the one silver lining for Dallas is it's not really, even though they've been so close the past couple of years, it's not necessarily Stanley Cup or bust, because they obviously extended Wyatt Johnson at the deadline. They signed Mikko Rantanen to 8 years. They're going to, assuming that a guy like Duchesne keeps taking these Joe Pavelski team-friendly one-year deals with them, they're probably going to have the same team except with a fully healthy Miro Heiskanen next season. So I feel like this might be a bit of a gap year for them, unfortunately, as good as they are offensively. But yeah, it's really tough right now in a postseason setting to see them just being able to corral Colorado at all. Like, it could get pretty ugly from a possession perspective.
When you think about what we're seeing from teams, like, how much do you weight anything we've seen? For example, over the last 2.5 weeks, I feel like every time I watch them play, the Avalanche look like the most imposing scoring chance generation machine in the league. And we know from last year that that might matter more than just about any other team trait in terms of predicting playoff success. But they're also really struggling to get the amount of goals that you'd expect them to, like, commensurate with the level of pressure and strain they're putting teams in. Do you read anything into that at all? Or is it just, hey, this is the stretch run? This is almost like playoff preseason now.
Yeah, especially the game on Thursday. I think all the games this week in general for the teams that at least one team in the game doesn't have anything to play for, you can almost throw it out. We've seen some crazy scores and lopsided goal totals. That's why I'm kind of looking at a lot of the stats from Four Nations on. We're about entering the 25 or so game mark for every team there, and I feel like that's a pretty good sample, especially post-deadline, a team like the Avs.
Yep.
It doesn't really make sense to look at their early season numbers when their team is so dramatically different right now. And so when you look at that 25-game sample, it becomes pretty clear like who's playing well and who is struggling. It's not necessarily the be-all, end-all. We've seen the past couple Stanley Cup champions kind of not limp into the postseason but not be playing their best hockey and then all of a sudden turn it on. I think a team like Florida comes to mind right now where, assuming they get Tkachuk back, they're going to get Ekblad back in game three with Barkov playing once again. We saw them kind of almost tank a game last weekend against Detroit where they were just using AHL guys for the most part and didn't really seem to care about whether they won or lost. That's obviously not reflective of how they're going to look come the postseason. So, yeah, I think you have to like apply context for all these situations individually, but I'm not too worried about the Avs, especially as we just said, in round one against Dallas. I imagine they're going to have no trouble turning those shots into goals.
Yeah, the Avs look they look pretty scary going into the playoffs, especially as you said, with the way they've remade their roster this season and post-trade deadline, that version of the team. I mean, again, talking about, you know, pre-playoff preseason, they lost to the Canucks last night, so take these games with a big grain of salt. This is a very, like, I was just saying we don't want to do, like, we don't need you to do Stephen A. Smith-style hot takes, but I'll do a very, like, first-take-style question here.
Okay.
Which player in the NHL do you think has the most to prove going into the playoffs?
Ooh. Man, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I know my answer. I'm going to suggest, let's do a dual lightning round. I'm going to suggest
names for you. Dual lightning round.
I'm going to suggest names for you, and then you break them down. Ready?
All right.
Connor Hellebuyck, because that's my answer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good one.
That's fair. I think the way I view it, though, is I don't hold what happened last year against him.
Okay.
Because you just watch those games, and it's like, you could have had prime Dominic Hasek playing at his best there, and it wouldn't have really mattered with how the Avalanche are just carving them up. But you're right. Like, he's going to unanimously win the Vezina again. He might very well win the Hart. He's going to enter with massive expectations if they play, especially Minnesota in round one. I feel like that's a really good confidence-building opportunity for them to, like, get into round two, have a comfortable series, and then wait for most likely Colorado in round two and try to shed some of those demons. So I think he's in a pretty good spot to do so. And yeah, I think Tom's right. Like that's probably the most in terms of like shedding past demons and solidifying the season he's had. I feel like
Mitch Marner.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially
pending UFA,
with
Mitch Marner.
UFA, yeah. Although I feel like it won't affect it that much.
It's just baked in.
He could have like a pointless 6 or 7 games and still get 15 million from Chicago.
I think he's at
the
yeah, I guess, because I was thinking, even like, you would think if all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, where's this playoff Mitch Marner been, and he's a really dominant player, you would think it would drive his number up. But you're right, like,
I think
a team
be
as desperate
as
Chicago, he's probably getting that anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe just
get it in a better place.
It'll embolden maybe Toronto to just give them like the full freight of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'd argue that Austin Matthews scoring goals is much more vital to whatever playoff run they're going to have, but it might not be fair to hold that against him considering he's clearly playing pretty banged up. But yeah, for the Leafs, it's interesting because if the standings hold, they're going to avoid both Tampa Bay and Florida. One of their previous sort of demons in the playoffs, Boston, has completely fallen out. Now, all of a sudden, they're most likely going to have a battle of Ontario.
I was going to say, they have a chance to find a new demon,
yeah,
the Ottawa Senators.
And so it's almost like, all right, we're finally around the corner, and then it could be even worse for them. But this probably would be the year. I mean, I know they made the second round a couple years ago, but this would be the year for them to shed a lot of that baggage. So those are for, I like the Edmonton guys as well. Not that they have anything to prove because they've been such great playoff performers,
yeah,
but given what they have at stake.
Just, it's just hard because their team seems so flawed this year. And as you said, they've had such incredible playoff runs already that even if Edmonton loses to LA, like, look, you lose in the first round and you're McDavid. And if he's like below a point per game, he's going to hear about it. But I don't think anyone's all of a sudden going to look at like McDavid or Draisaitl and be like, oh, you can't win with these guys. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I think everyone is going to accurately identify that it was the rest of the team and the roster construction that was the issue.
I just feel like considering how close they were last year.
That's
and
a good point.
This being the last year, Draisaitl's at 8.5 before he goes up to 14 next year. McDavid will be entering the final year of his 12.5, mm-hmm. and that'll skyrocket as well. They had such a horrible offseason and got much worse. And for them to lose in round one to LA, potentially, it would be a great story from like
it's
LA finally doing it.
Yeah.
But imagine, talk about Stephen A. Imagine the takes you're going to hear all over TV and radio if that happens. It's gonna
so
be,
good.
It's going to be absolutely obnoxious.
It does. It feels a little bit like I'm thinking. I think it was, you know, Vegas went obviously to the cup final in their first season. Then didn't they lose to San Jose the next year in the first round? And it happens. You know what I mean? Especially for these teams that are in their window, you always think like, oh, okay, we're going to go on a long run, conference finals every year. Blips happen. Weird things happen. Now, there may be bigger issues with Edmonton, but, you know, far be it for me to stop people from hot take dunking on the Edmonton Oilers, but we'll see. I don't think a first round exit necessarily means too much. I don't think it means the window is closed if that happens.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, it's not a new conversation, but it's an interesting thing to bring up as we watch hockey this week, is one of the negatives of the current playoff format, and the one that everyone keeps coming back to, is locking in these same matchups over and over, mm-hmm. making it a situation where, you know, we saw Toronto go through it a couple times. We're going to see it now with Dallas and Colorado and maybe Florida and Tampa Bay, where it's like two of the best 5 to 6 teams in the league are playing in round one, and one of them is going to lose after the first round, be sitting at home, and we're going to be like, oh, it kind of sucks that all these great players don't get to play further into their postseason. The bigger issue for me is what you see with a Carolina, for example, where they lock up their playoff spot. They've been set firmly in that second spot in the Metro for months now. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't move up or down.
Mm-hmm.
And so these games don't matter
don't
at all.
Anything.
If it was a 1-8 system, they could conceivably be fighting for second in the East, home ice in round two.
Yep.
These games would look much more competitive and be more meaningful. And I can't believe that the NHL wouldn't
prefer that
and be like, yeah, I'd much rather these games right before the playoffs matter as opposed to being preseason level hockey.
The only thing that Gary Bettman has like ever been more dug in on was the Arizona Coyotes, and I guess that went away eventually, so maybe hold out hope if you want the playoff format to change, but he's like bafflingly dedicated to this playoff format.
I get like 1-16 would be the best. I get why
I get the
travel logistics are a nightmare.
Fair,
that's fair. 1-8 though, I really feel like the arguments pro versus against are heavily in the favor.
Well,
and
it's also like, it's one of these arguments that frustrates me because it's not actually abstract. We had 1-8.
Yeah.
And it was great.
It was fine.
It worked out really well. And this one didn't improve it. So whatever. Anyways, some suggestions on players facing pressure in the inbox. First of all, I got to read this one from Tyler. Kuzmenko has the most to prove.
No.
He's
oh
a joke.
God.
It's a joke.
Tyler, no.
No, Kuzmenko obviously has nothing to prove because he's established himself as a bona fide star again with LA.
I feel like
it's done. Mission accomplished.
Okay, if LA loses to Edmonton, it wouldn't be obvious.
Kuzmenko is going to take the blame.
It wouldn't be an upset regardless of the seeding because it's the Oilers.
Yeah.
But if you lose to Edmonton for the fourth straight year and you have home ice and you're like, and they're banged up heading in, it's
and,
the best.
And everyone is going to pick LA.
Yeah.
Like, they are going to be not quite unanimous, but so many people are going to pick them this year.
At that point, like, how do you even proceed with your job if you're anyone involved? You're like, we've hit our ceiling and it's round one losing to the same team over and over again.
And because Gary Bettman loves this playoff system, like, there's no relief in sight. Yeah. We're just going to keep doing this over
and over. I guess the answer would be to win the Pacific and face a wild card, but then Edmonton would just be a wild card team.
Or pray that Edmonton wins the Pacific. But then you drop down to the wild card. You know what I mean? You're like, it just feels like this. You're just always going to be locked in to this with them.
I know. It's crazy.
They need it. They need it. Although even then, you know, the whole thing where it's like, we're going to create these rivalries. Has it created, like, Edmonton, LA is going to be year four. Has it created this really heated rivalry? I don't know. Maybe it has. I'm not locked in on what those fan conversations, but it doesn't feel like we're talking about this great Kings-Oilers rivalry, and they're about to meet in the playoffs for the fourth straight year.
The Kings have to win once.
Right.
Yeah.
The Kings have to win once. Like, if they get to a game six and it's 3-2 and the game's played with some bad feeling and the Kings win, then the next time we get it, it'll have...
So the fifth time. All it takes is five playoff meetings in short succession.
Well,
I know what you're saying.
Like,
yeah, the sequencing of it, for sure.
Well, and there needs to be... One side needs to be legitimately threatening to the other side.
Yeah.
You're not a rival if you're swept aside easily. Like... The truth is that the Oilers and the Oilers have been less of a rival for the Kings and more of a foil. Like the Kings have been a foil for the Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
They're just good enough and structurally sound enough to make the Oilers sweat just a little bit in a 7-game series.
Although the past 2 years have been pretty on, like,
I don't know how much sweating has been.
The first year was very close. Two years ago.
Well, first of all, they forced game 7, right?
That was the first year.
They made the Oilers win game 6 and 7. And then the next year, they had a 2-1 lead in the series, and they had that big Kempe second period. And then Draisaitl and McDavid took over the third to win game 4, and then they won the next two.
I guess what doesn't help as well is like the diminishing
results.
But
there
was
a moment where the Oilers looked like they were about to go down 3-1.
Yeah.
In the series the second year.
Right. But the first year is close 7-game series.
Yeah.
Then that one had that, but that was a 6-game series, I think. And then last year's was like a 5-game thrashing.
Totally.
And so like now we're getting to a point where it's like it's going the opposite direction.
Also, I was in Seattle. I remember I was covering that that Kraken
Avs
series. So I mean, you might have been there for it too. We might have been watching it together. And it just felt, even with the Oilers leading in that game 4, it was like the Kings are only good enough to cause the Oilers stress. They're not good enough to beat them.
Yeah.
So until they're a real threat, it's not a rivalry. That's my rule.
No, it's fair. We want to draft something here to wrap up the week.
Sure. Why don't we draft? Do you want to draft? Let's do something Canucks-y.
Ooh.
Let's do something Canucks-y. Let's draft. Let's draft Canucks players that they could consider trading this offseason based off of how probable you think it is that it happens.
So players they should trade,
or like they might actually trade. Could. Yeah.
Probability of getting traded.
Well,
I like that. Probability of getting traded.
Sure, you can start.
All right, I'll take. Oh boy, this is a loaded first overall pick here. I am going to take Nils Höglander.
I think that's a good pick.
Thank you.
I think that's a strong pick.
Clear some cap space, maybe get an asset back.
Well, and he has real value.
Yeah,
which is key.
Yeah, but you'd also be selling him at 20% of what he was worth last year.
Totally. Yeah.
But yeah,
is that. Was that out of character for the team we're talking about? I don't know.
Yeah, good point. All right, I'll go next. I'm not going to go with the obvious one. I'll give you a fun one. Thatcher Demko.
Yeah.
Considering the goalie market, mm-hmm. there's like no even 1B options. Like Jake Allen is by far the best goalie available in the UFA market. So I think teams are going to be dipping into the trade market and spending 9.5 or whatever on your goalie tandem, even with the cap going up. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm not sure what the market would be like for him, but someone's going to get desperate, especially if they get bounced because of goaltending early in the playoffs.
I like it.
I'm going to pick Victor Mancini.
That's a good one.
And I'll take the obvious one off the board in Elias Pettersson.
I was hoping he'd get back to me. Not likely.
Well, I don't think he's that likely. He shouldn't have been a first round pick, right?
No.
Second round pick makes sense.
Second round pick value right there on Elias Pettersson.
God, there's like no one else to choose from.
I believe in you.
Got to dig deep.
Okay, I'm going to do the opposite of what Jamie did. I'm going to sell incredibly high on Kiefer Sherwood.
So that is a smart pick. Like, I don't think it will happen. The conceptually, the idea of we got this guy who scored 40 points and set the NHL hits record, and he's making, what, 1.9?
1.5.
1.5 next year?
He kind of feels like a Julian Brisbois. I've paid five.
Imagine what you could get for
draft
him.
Picks
yeah.
for him.
Yeah,
it would be incredible.
It's at least interesting. Something I think you have to explore. You have to maybe have some discussions with other teams.
That would be so out of character for this franchise.
I love
the pick.
It sure would. Sure would. I didn't even mean to do that. Anyways, all right. I got one more pick here. Oh boy, that was like the last good one. Have we said Connor Garland? I'll say Connor Garland.
And then let's go another round.
No. We're already running out. We're already running out of names. What do you mean, let's go another round? What do you want, Max Sasson?
Hey, there's still great value on the board. 2025 first round pick.
Oh, that's not a player.
It's an asset.
As somebody Tone said, rights to sign Brock Besser should have been number one.
I honestly strongly considered it. I'm not kidding.
I love when you make the rules and then immediately draft the loophole.
Yeah,
like, but you could have said that. You could have stipulated that was okay.
But
you
then
could
I
have
wouldn't
set the
be
rules.
Able to. Yeah, I mean, look, that's the point.
All right, Have a great weekend, everyone. We will be back on Monday. Enjoy the weather. Enjoy the Canucks game tomorrow. Enjoy the other hockey. Enjoy everything you're doing. We'll talk to you on Monday here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.